Move to the fourth case this morning, Vesely v. Arms List. Okay, Ms. Dabrowski.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. We're here today because of ArmsList.com's role in the illegal gun sale that led to the murder of plaintiff Alex Vesely's sister, Jitka Vesel. ArmsList.com was created deliberately to fill the void left by other websites, including Craigslist and eBay, that were opting out of the online private gun market due to concerns about illegal gun sales and the risks of death and injury leading from those sales. ArmsList became the self-appointed Craigslist devoted entirely to private gun sales. It embraced those risks that eBay and Craigslist wanted to avoid, and it actually increased those risks, and this is how it did that. It automatically posted every single ad for the private sale of guns nationwide, and it steered buyers using its website towards this nationwide secondary gun market. It never informed any of its users of the federal law that restricts specifically these sales, that is, private, out-of-state gun sales, by requiring the involvement in those
sales. You think it's our responsibility to do so?
I do, Your Honor.
Do you have any authority for that position, or is it just one you've decided that to meet the exigencies of this case?
I think the Illinois Supreme Court in several cases, but we rely on the Roe case, has held that when a party, through its own affirmative conduct, increases the likelihood of harm, makes that harm reasonably foreseeable, even if the harm...
Well, it's reasonably foreseeable in the city of Chicago that anybody gets a gun is going to kill somebody. Because it happens all the time. Does that mean anybody that sells a gun to legitimate things or advertises a gun legitimately and if somebody takes advantage of it or lists for somebody else that this gun is available is now liable?
To your first point, Your Honor, the Illinois Supreme Court, in the case of City of Chicago versus Beretta, which was a nuisance case, it took as its starting point that it is reasonably foreseeable in a country like ours that allows private ownership of guns that criminals will obtain guns. And the court went on to say it's not only likely but inevitable that death and injury will follow. When you have a business, you have certain duties to operate that business in a responsible manner, especially when you're on notice that that business is fraught with danger. Now, ArmsList didn't just enter this market at a time when other websites, and again, I name Craigslist and eBay.
I'm alleged by my children, and I'll agree to it, to be computer illiterate. But as I understand it, the defendant in this case is a company that simply advertises these people have guns for sale, and you can contact them at such and such a place. That's all they do.
At the time, what
no.
they...
That's a yes or no question.
Well, that's not all they do, Your Honor. At the time,
they do more.
They do more, and they don't do more that we
what
allege.
What do they do that's beyond have. That? Beyond posting the name and location of somebody who's got a gun for sale.
At the time relevant to our case, they started their website, Your Honor, and they called it a local classifieds for guns. But it was anything but. It was not a local classifieds for guns. As soon as a seller posted an ad, ArmsList stated, your ad will be automatically posted at the city, state, and national level.
Right.
Never provided any notice that there's a federal law that governs those sales.
You're not teaching and not running a law school. What I said is all they do is say, we'll post, if you want to buy our services, we'll post that you've got a gun for sale.
Well.
That's what they say. That's the only thing they do.
Well, that's the only thing they undertake to do.
Yes.
It doesn't mean they don't have a duty to do
no,
wrong.
No, I didn't say that. I just said that's all they do.
All they
but
do.
You think, is there a case which says that they have to inform them that we are notifying you that you cannot sell this gun, this is somebody else, to a foreigner or a felon? There is no such requirement.
Judge, I want to be clear that this is not simply a duty to inform case. I mean, this is more generally a case that says that when you have a business that has recognized and known risks, first, don't increase those risks, and second, act responsibly to avoid the risk that those dangers will cause harm to
others.
That
is entirely too general for a tort rule, and I think that's what the questions are trying to get at here. What was the specific negligent act committed by Arms List?
Right.
You can't just state it at that broad, vague level of generality.
Well, this
if you want a tort rule out of this.
Sure, Your Honor, and these are the specific acts. As I've said, they started the local classifieds for guns. That's what it was supposed to be. They automatically posted these ads nationwide. They steered their buyers to this nationwide market. And then their own frequently asked question, their own take on the very law that goes to the heart of their business model was, the question was is termed, what if I want to transfer my gun out of area? And the answer to that sort of vague, almost deliberately confusing question is, Arms List was designed for local transactions. Please use the site accordingly. But that's not what it was designed for. It was designed to broadcast ads as far and wide as possible. In this case, Your Honor...
So what should they have done? What was the omission?
Well, the omission was, first of all, they could have been honest about what they were, and they could have been who they said they were. They could have been a local classifieds for guns. And what that means, Your Honor, is someone posts an ad, and unless they opt into a nationwide market, unless they want to expand the reach of their ad, that's where it's going to show up. It's going to show up in state. What I'm trying to drive at here, Your Honor, is that there was a problem that was reasonably foreseeable to Arms List. They knew there was an issue. They knew there was a contradiction right at the heart of their business model. We want to be a local classifieds for guns because we know once people go out of state, it triggers certain responsibilities and rules. But we're a for-profit business. Our revenue depends on the widest audience possible. Our users are going to like the widest audience possible for the sale and purchase of guns. So we're going to automatically publish these ads to a nationwide market. And when we're asked about it, we're not going to give a straightforward answer, which would have been easy to do. We're not going to direct them to the ATF's website.
And they did direct users to the ATF's website.
They directed in their click-through terms of use users to consult with ATF.gov.
Right.
That's the link.
I've
been to ATF.gov. You will spend hours. First of all, you have to know the right question to ask. But you will spend hours trying to get from ATF.gov.
Okay. What I'm hearing is a duty to warn claim. Or at least that's what I think I'm hearing. I'm still trying to get an answer to what specifically Arms List had a duty to do here and from what does that duty arise?
Okay. Well, the duty was to design and operate their website responsibly.
Okay,
and
that's entirely too vague as a tort rule. This is a specific novel claim that you're advancing here. So you have to identify what specifically Arms List had a duty to do.
And the specific thing was, again, to be who they say they are.
Okay, that's a platitude. I need something concrete. What should they have said on the website?
They should have said right under where they said local classifieds for guns, or right under where they said your ad will be automatically posted at the city, state, national level. They should have said all out-of-state private sales must involve FFLs.
Okay. So it is a duty to warn. There needed
in
to be part, that warning.
In part, it is a duty to warn. They could have met their duty by providing their client, their users, with references to the one federal law that goes right to the heart of their business model.
Do they have a brick and mortar operation too?
They do not, Your Honor. It is
purely
virtual.
Well, let's say they did, apart from the computer or the internet thing. Do they have a requirement to do the same warning?
Well, Judge, we cited the Pavlides versus Niles gun show case out of the Ohio appellate court, and factually, it's a very similar case to ours. You know, there the gun show had some rules.
Well, I know a gun show. I mean, a gun show is a little different. I'm talking about you go to their shop. And that's what I'm trying to compare it to, with brick-and-mortar operation versus the internet thing. If you go to their shop, they wouldn't be required to warn, though, would they?
Well, if you go...
Suppose you're from California, came to their shop to buy a gun.
If you went to a licensed dealer to buy a gun, you would have to pass a mandatory background check, And the killer in our case, Dmitry Smirnov, could not have done that. In fact, he couldn't have bought a gun legally anywhere in the United States. That's the purpose of Section 922 of the Gun Control Act that requires out-of-state gun sales to be handled by FFLs. As the Second Circuit said in U.S. versus Mateo, the legislative purpose of that act is to ensure that interstate transactions are funneled through licensed dealers. Why? In part so the mandatory background checks will be conducted and illegal gun sales won't occur, and people who can't legally obtain guns won't be able to obtain them. That's there specifically to reduce violent gun crime. You know, we also have the seller in this case who was prosecuted and convicted for violating this statute. And what he said was, if I had known that I couldn't sell my gun out of state, that it constituted a federal felony.
You're talking about the Seattle guy?
I'm talking about Benedict Ladera.
Yeah, he violated the law. There's no question.
There's no question, Your Honor, that he violated.
The question is whether or not the one who advertised violated the law.
And besides regretting that he was convicted and sentenced, Mr. Ladera also said that he regretted his part as an unknowing facilitator in this heinous crime. Our position is that Armslist knew or should have known that it was facilitating specifically this kind of crime and taken some measures to guard against that risk. You know, this is on point with cases like Roe. The Illinois Supreme Court in Eisberg cited and referred to several affirmative conduct cases where if you, through your own conduct, increase the risk that someone will be harmed by a third party, you have a duty to guard against it. You're right, Your Honor. These are novel facts, but they go back to very bedrock basic principles of Illinois negligence law. You can't just turn the lights on to a business and wash your hands of doing anything else.
No, but it's far from clear that the absence of the warning that you argued that Armslist should have posted on the site was either a proximate cause of this injury or that it was a violation of a duty not to have it. And these all turn on, you know, both questions turn on the question of foreseeability. And I haven't heard an argument that this crime was reasonably foreseeable by the lack of a warning on this online classified service.
And I understand your concern with that, Your Honor, but I think it's important to remember where we are. We're at the 12B6 motion to dismiss stage.
It's a legal question.
A fact we
it's
have.
It's not a factual issue. This is duty and proximate cause are legal questions.
Sure, Your Honor. But one of the alleged facts we have before us is a seller saying, if I had
that
if
doesn't
if
make
I had
any
known
difference. His statement doesn't have anything to do with the legal question of whether we ought to recognize the duty under Illinois law to have such a warning, such that it's negligence when there isn't one.
And I guess my point is, that's the seller's position, that's what would have stopped him from doing
it. His position is irrelevant. You know, he doesn't dictate what the legal duties are. That's a question of policy for the court. Duty is always a policy question.
I understand, Your Honor, but in addition to his statement, which is part of the factual allegations of this complaint, we're not saying...
Totally self-serving.
We're not saying it is... That's true, Your Honor, and discovery will...
made at sentencing to mitigate his responsibility. It's worth zero.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about the policy here. And okay, the policy question about whether there's a duty on the part of an online classified service that permits advertisements for guns to issue a specific warning of the nature that you're advocating for here about interstate gun transactions.
And I'm not sure, Your Honor, that the burden is to find a case directly on...
No, there isn't one.
Right.
And that's not your burden, but you have to make a policy argument
right.
for the recognition of that duty, and that's what I'm not hearing.
And if we look at another case that we cited, the Indelkoffer case, this is where the church designed and organized a treasure hunt, and what it told people is drive your cars as fast as you can from one place to another. And
right, and the Armslist is not telling people to engage in illegal drug or gun transactions.
No.
It's providing an online classified forum.
It's telling them, place your local classified ads. We're going to broadcast them to the entire nation. And as Mr. Ladera said, it was astonishingly easy for me to sell my gun to this murderer at the mere click of a mouse.
Right. because he can ignore the link to the ATF website and keep himself in ignorance of his legal responsibilities.
Well,
but
he,
shifting the responsibility for that to ArmsList as an online classified service is the pertinent question here.
What the Indelkoffer case came down to is along this treasure hunt course along public roads, there were stop signs that were obscured. And the duty was imposed on the church because it knew or should have known that if it's encouraging people to drive fast, to break the speed limit, it's likely that they're going to miss the rules of the road. They're going to miss these stop signs that are behind, slightly obscured behind trees. They had a duty to inform their participants, first, remember to follow the rules of the road, and by the way, there are some stop signs out there that you may not see.
Right, but we're several steps removed from that. That's sort of a direct chain of causation to the accident. We're several steps removed here. We've got a criminal who's buying a gun and then using it intentionally to stalk and kill the victim here.
We have
what is foreseeable about that to ArmsList by sponsoring this website?
It's foreseeable if you tell people you're posting local ads, we're going to post them nationwide, and this obscure stop sign, if you will, Section 922 of the Gun Control Act, which speaks right to the heart of this business model, you're likely not to see that. Even if you go to ATF.gov, you are likely not to see that. Why not just put that up front and center? Why all this talking out of both sides of your mouth and saying, well, it's a local classified gun site, but we're going to post your ads nationally? And when we anticipate your question, what if I want to sell out of my own area, we're going to also do some double talk there. We're going to say it's not really what we're designed for. How simple would it have been to just inform its entire user base of, again, the one federal law that goes to the very heart of its business model? I see that my time is just about up.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Vose?
Good morning. James Vogts on behalf of ArmsList. The district court aptly characterized ArmsList as an electronic bulletin board, and that's exactly what ArmsList is. That's exactly the service it provided. It provided a website on which persons who own firearms and other types of personally owned goods could post advertisements for the sale of their products. What we have here in this case is an Illinois tort case in which a third party executed an heinous crime and killed the plaintiff's decedent. It's difficult to conceive how the Illinois Supreme Court, given the rules, the clear rules it has articulated in this kind of case on both the questions of duty and proximate cause, would do anything but affirm the district court's dismissal of the case. There is nothing illegal or improper about advertising the private sale of a firearm on a nationwide basis. You can sell a firearm across state lines if you involve an FFL. People can search for firearms across state lines even if they don't intend to purchase the gun. You can be a resident of multiple states. If I have a summer home around the lake in Michigan, I can buy from a private seller a gun in Michigan, even though my permanent home is here in Illinois. So there's a wide variety of circumstances that justify national advertisements of firearms. But as you know, this court is bound to, you know, follow Illinois Supreme Court cases on the issues in this case. And the Illinois Supreme Court has been clear and has been consistent that in cases involving third-party criminal attacks, there must be a special relationship between the plaintiff and the defendant in order to impose a duty. Now, the plaintiffs try to articulate and carve out some exception that they see that the Supreme Court has arrived at in the special relationship area, and that is special relationship only applies in those cases in which a defendant is alleged to have failure to stop a third party from attacking a plaintiff. Plaintiffs argue that in a different kind of case where the defendant itself conducted some form of conduct on its own that may have increased or contributed to the risk, a special relationship is not required. Well, that's not the law in Illinois, and the plaintiffs failed to even mention or distinguish the Supreme Court's case in Marshall versus Burger King. That was, to use the plaintiff's language, an affirmative conduct case. There, Burger King allegedly failed to erect concrete pillars between the parking lot and the building, only constructed a brick wall of a few feet high, thus contributing to the risk that some driver in the parking lot, as happened, would drive into the store and kill the plaintiff. That's an affirmative conduct case in which the special relationship was test was applied. In fact, a case decided by this court 4 years ago, Reynolds versus CB Sports Bar, another affirmative conduct case in which the special relationship test was applied to find a duty. In that case, the bar was alleged to have been an active accomplice in getting the plaintiff intoxicated, steering her toward her assailants, vouching for the assailant's character, and essentially saying, it's okay, you can take a ride with those people. Well, ultimately, she was sexually assaulted and filed suit against the bar. Again, business invitor, business invitee, special relationship, duty found. So this distinction that the plaintiffs believe exists in the Illinois Supreme Court's law on third-party criminal tax just doesn't exist. The district court could be sustained on proximate cause just as easily. There's two components to proximate cause under Illinois law: cause in fact and legal cause. The defendant does not in any way concede that the plaintiffs can meet their cause in fact burden, but for purposes of this appeal, I think legal cause is where the court could find itself most comfortable. And when you analyze legal cause under Illinois law, you start with the condition versus cause analysis, namely that if defendant merely creates a condition on which a third party acts independently, that original condition is not the proximate cause of the occurrence. And that is precisely what we have here. Dmitry Cernov and Benedict Ladera, they both committed criminal acts. Those criminal acts under Illinois law insulate Arms List from liability. The court need not get to defendant's argument that the Communications Decency Act also protects them unless it finds that there is a viable state law claim. We suggest there's not, and unless the court has any questions, we ask that the district court be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll give you 2 more minutes if you want to make a response.
Thank you, Your Honor. There is Illinois Supreme Court case, it's the Eisberg case, that distinguishes very clearly between special relationship cases and affirmative conduct cases. That's what that case is all about. Special relationship only comes into play when there is no duty but for that relationship between the defendant and either the victim of the harm or the person who perpetrated the harm. It's a business and an invitee, common carrier and passenger for a special relationship that creates that duty to protect the victim of the harm or employer-employee when you have a duty to control someone from causing harm to others.
Right, it's a form, a species of assumed duty.
Yes, and this
rather
is
than direct duty. And you're making a direct duty argument here, as I understand
correct,
it.
Correct, Your Honor. This is not a duty to protect case. This is a duty to refrain from affirmative conduct that is likely to lead to harm to others. The proximate cause argument, which the district court did not reach, you know, the same reasons that there is reasonable foreseeability here, there is legal cause. It's the same analysis, and that's what the Illinois Supreme Court said in Beretta, that you look at the same issues. In proximate cause, a third party is not going to break the causal connection, especially where the first party's own conduct leads the way to invites the harm caused by the third party. There is generally an assumption that people will follow the law, but that assumption goes out the window when your own conduct invites people or gives them, as Prosser said, an especial temptation to break the law. And that's exactly what happened here. And I'd like to go back to what Armsless could have done and should have done to avoid this risk. When eBay got out of this business, it said one of its concerns is that there would be illegal sales because it's very hard on the Internet, as opposed to brick and mortar, to know if someone on the other side can really legally buy a gun, if they can pass a background check. And that's one risk that eBay wanted to avoid. That's the risk that ArmsList jumped into. What could they have done besides telling their users about the one law that goes right to the heart of their business model? They could have required registration instead of just opening this wild, wild west where anyone can talk to anyone and sell a gun. The problem with Internet gun sales is a loss of transparency. You don't know who you're dealing with. An impediment to illegal gun sales is to put up some fences and some stop signs and some go slow signs, and one of those is requiring people to say who they are. The price of entry is that you put down your name and your address and information like that, so that if a sale goes south, if it turns out to be illegal, people can put the pieces back together. You remove all of those. It's basically Indelkoffer, where you go and take the stop signs down and tell people to drive as fast as they possibly can.
Thank you, counsel.
We think the allegations in the complaint make a plausible right of relief, and we'd ask that the district court's dismissal be reversed. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.